Chapter 3. Youth and Education. I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will guide thee with mine eye. Psalm of David. 1830s. Mary was not robust. From earliest childhood, her sensitiveness to all about her affected her physical well-being. When quite a child, she adopted the Graham system to cure dyspepsia, and for many years ate only bread and vegetables, and drank nothing except water, but to little avail. One of her most critical biographers wrote, quote, "The real story of Mary Baker's youth was the story of her health." End quote. The third stanza of her youthful Resolutions for the Morning tends to substantiate this conclusion. "I'll form resolutions with strength from on high, such physical laws to obey, as reason with appetite pleasures deny, that health may my efforts repay." But her obedience to physical laws, her self-denial, even though aided with strength from on high, did not reward her with the health she so desired. The fourth picture in Christ in Christmas, the Christmas Eve scene, could depict this phase of Mary's experience. The young girl in the wheelchair in the foreground is pensive, looking away from the merriment. Physical suffering turns us toward spirit, and there is no indication of spirit at all in this picture. The seven-pointed star and the white light it radiates are absent. There is no light of understanding. The Christmas tree dominates the scene and is far too large. Is not this, as it would appear, to the heavenly homesick? Do not the Christmas tree and material gift-giving dominate the Christmas festivities? Look again at the youthful invalid. Is she not receiving tender, loving care? But it is strictly human care and attention. She is dressed in black, third degree, depravity, physical. The man, father, is dressed in black. The woman, mother, is dressed in gray, second degree, evil beliefs disappearing, moral. But where is the light of the Christ so sorely needed by the invalid? The song of the angels might reach her, but no one is listening for spiritual songs in the hubbub of merrymaking. Another New England poet, who suffered much from ill health, also turned away from the Christmas Eve scene to thoughts spiritual. John Greenleaf Whittier's poem would appeal to the physical sufferer seeking release and longing for the Christ in Christmas. "Let every creature hail the morn on which the Holy Child was born, and know through God's exceeding grace release from things of time and place. I listen from no mortal tongue to hear the song the angels sung, and wait within myself to know the Christmas lilies bud and blow. The outward symbols disappear from him whose inward sight is clear, and small must be the choice of days to him who fills them all with praise. Keep while ye need it, brother mine, with honest zeal your Christmas sign. but judge not him who every morn feels in his heart the Lord Christ born. Despite the physical suffering and her longing and striving for health, Mary's childhood was a happy one, centering around the homestead in Bow. Her formal education began in the summer of 1826, when she accompanied her older sisters for the first time to Bow School, number 3, which was a mile from the Baker's home. Her father had drawn the plans for the building of this school several years earlier, and was continuously active on the school committee, which was responsible for Bow's 7 schools. Mary learned quickly and easily, though her attendance at school was very irregular due to ill health. However, the home was as much a classroom as was the school, for both parents read well, and as much as a busy farm life would allow. The conversations were kept pleasing and profitable for everyone, which often included a boarding district schoolteacher or traveling clergyman in this hospitable family circle. Mrs. Eddy wrote in her autobiography, quote, "My childhood home I remember as one with the open hand. The needy were ever welcome, and to the clergy were accorded special household privileges." End quote. Mark was very much in favor of higher education and was pleased when Albert decided to study law. The lad helped to finance his education by teaching several terms at district schools, his first being in 1826, when he taught school number 18 in Concord for a salary of $3.35 a month. In the winter term of 1830, when Mary was 8 years old, there was an opening at Bow School number 3, and the Baker girls were delighted when it was learned that Albert was to be the new schoolmaster. From his vantage point as teacher, he discovered a depth of scholarship in Mary equal to his own, thus cementing a bond between them. This was Albert's last term of teaching before leaving for Dartmouth, but he continued assisting Mary with her formal education by tutoring her during his vacations from college. The family circle was dwindling. Samuel had entered business in Boston several years earlier. Albert was away at college. And in 1832, Abigail left the home circle to attend Pembroke Academy, as Albert had done before her. The year after Albert's graduation from Dartmouth, in 1834, there were even greater changes in store for the Bakers. Early in 1835, Grandmother Baker died at the age of 91. Mark had cared for his mother. Being the youngest son, he had stayed at home to help his father on the farm, and he had expected his youngest son to do the same. But George left the farm in the summer of 1835. On the 7th of September, Mary wrote to him, "Yet though in the enjoyment of these blessings, you informed us there was one thing wanting to fill up the measure of your happiness, to know that Father was reconciled to your leaving us. I think from what we have heard him say in the family, and tell others, he was sensible as well as all of us. The exchange was necessary for your health. She, Mother, wishes me to give her love to you. And as for Father, he will write by Mr. Cutchins if he sees him, if not, by the mail, and give you the result of his researches at Sanborton as he is now there with mother to look at a farm. By the end of the year, the Bakers were making arrangements to move to their new farm, just 1 mile from the town of Sanborton Bridge. The older girls were delighted, but Mary and her mother found the parting from home and friends very difficult, and were ill as a consequence. The Galt family had been dear friends and neighbors as long as Mary could remember, and to the older Galt boy, Andrew, she composed a parting verse. Hard is the task to take a final leave of friends whom we shall see, ah, never. With unaccustomed grief my bosom heaves and burns with latent fire forever. A vernal feeling thrills my very breast, and scarce the accustomed word is spoken. We firmer grasp the hand, still loath to part, and wish that grasp might never be broken. But go, those finer feelings riven, which through my bosom shot, and with thee take this flower of heaven, the flower forget-me-not. Abigail did not soon recover from her illness, but the move was completed in January of 1836. 3 beautiful, gracious young ladies made a very favorable impression on the town of Sanborton, and their new home was very soon a social center. Albert spent the summer of 1836 at home with the family, while Abigail was teaching the village school and living in town. At the end of August, Albert wrote to George, "Mary has attended school all summer. Martha commences going next week, when Abigail's school closes. Father is as happy as a clam. He lives in the neighborhood of 2 sanctuaries, a matter of the greatest moment, 2 academies." All New Hampshire towns had their district schools, but very many did not have an academy for advanced education. Sanborton had 2, and the Baker home was between Sanborton Academy on the south and Woodman Sanborton Academy farther to the north. Mary, who had just turned 15, had attended the local district school for the summer term, but 17-year-old Martha was looking forward to the fall term at the academy. A little later, when Mary was attending the academy, an incident occurred which was long remembered in Sanborton. A man who had escaped from the asylum for the insane at Concord invaded the schoolyard, brandishing a club. The children ran indoors, all except Mary, who advanced toward him. From the windows, they saw him wield the club above his head, but she walked straight up to the man, took his disengaged hand, and led him quietly to the gate. He reappeared the following Sunday, entered the church, and stood beside Mary during the hymn singing, afterward allowing himself to be taken into custody without resistance. Mary so loved the world that her life was an exemplification of St. John's words, quote, "Perfect love casteth out fear." In Retrospection and Introspection, Mrs. Eddy writes, quote, "It was my fair fortune to be often taught by some grand old divines," end quote. One of those distinguished Christian clergymen was the Reverend Enoch Corser, who moved to Sanborton Bridge from nearby Loudon in 1837, very shortly after the Bakers' move. Mr. Corser was a scholar with several years of teaching and tutoring experience, and the community lost no time in engaging him as principal teacher for Sanborn Academy. Mark Baker was elected to the board as a trustee at the same time, serving in different positions, including president, for the next 8 years. The Bakers and Corsers became good friends, and the clergyman soon recognized Mary's ability. He stated to his son, Bartlett, "I never before had a pupil with such depth and independence of thought. She has some great future, mark that. She is an intellectual and spiritual genius." Bartlett did mark his father's words and gave them to the world. Mary pursued a course of writing and began contributing to local newspapers at the age of 16, encouraged by more than one of her teachers. In later years, she realized that the true blessing in her early education lay in the character and nobility of her teachers, which they imparted along with the academics. She wrote in Science and Health, quote, "The pure and uplifting thoughts of the teacher, constantly imparted to pupils, will reach higher than the heavens of astronomy," end quote. And again, in Retrospection and Introspection, quote, "After my discovery of Christian Science, most of the knowledge I had gleaned from school books vanished like a dream. Learning was so illumined that grammar was eclipsed. Etymology was divine history, voicing the idea of God in man's origin and signification. Syntax was spiritual order and unity. Prosody, the song of angels, and no earthly or inglorious theme." End quote.